Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 29th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Parkin.
And I'm Darren Victoria.
And yeah, we've got a pretty good week of news this week. As we've got, you know, new stuff for the NSO, expansion pack stuff. We got news on Disney Dreamlight Valley and how the, let's say the publisher lied about the game.
Yeah.
They went back on one major feature for it hitting full launch.
Mm-hmm.
We got some good sales news for Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
And some Xbox news, among other things, as well as this Xbox partner preview, they call it, where they let some third parties and indies have a couple of announcements there, but nothing really major happened there, but some nice stuff.
Yeah.
Got announced. We'll talk about that stuff at the end, but before we get to that, we will talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some Salt Sea Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
This is the new game from I think Digoot Fabric, an indie developer that has done some other cool stuff. This one is basically a adventure game, but more exploratory to it. You're not, you know, going into scenes and, you know, dealing with a bunch of clicking all over the place. You're kind of going around seeing the, you know, it starts with this group of people that have been sort of working together for a bit on this island, and they are going to set out to figure out their next big thing.
Yeah.
And one of the leader of the group ends up disappearing after the night. Mm-hmm. And so one of the people is setting out to figure out what's going on. You get kind of a choice between two of the others to assist you on this, you know, this little quest they've given themselves. Mm-hmm. And that is an interesting thing. You get like little bits of info, like the, you know, this person can speak these languages. It's a world that's set after like a climate apocalypse has caused the Earth to, or their planet to, flood. And so the people that have remained are dealing with, you know, new life and all this. And particularly in this area, they have, you know, still got decent life and all this, but these people are kind of bird-like a little bit.
Yeah.
Because they use a lot of bird terms to refer to each other, that, you know, it's pretty interesting, like, seeing the world building stuff. That is pretty neat to see, and you kind of get choices for how you deal with the dialogue stuff, though, and you get, like, notifications about people, you know, way they react to the things you're talking about. That the thing they do is they kind of have this menu system, and yeah, that's kind of adds these things they call issues, where it's like, oh, this person, you know, is not reacting the way they would like to things, you know. But you also get like regular quests where I had one person who has a baby that needs another sling. Mm-hmm. So eventually found material for that kind of stuff. And so that kind of fills that up with things to do. And then sometimes it may change into their different categories for like unresolvable things, that kind of stuff. So yeah, it kind of feels almost like a tabletop RPG kind of thing, of the way it's laying out these different things that are going on. Is just like, well, this is just you know, a matter of fact right now of what these characters are going through, that kind of stuff. It's a bit tough to describe without seeing it for yourself, but mainly the way that I've been going around this first area is kind of clicking on all the icons. You see some things are just, you know, taking a look at something, versus people you can talk to and try and solve issues and whatnot. And yeah, we're trying to, I think potentially we're not going to find this person on this island. We'll be probably going to other areas, but we're dealing with a certain person that has history with the group and the missing person and dealing with their hangups and all that. So it's pretty interesting, like story-wise, kind of following all this, and you're at filling out a like journal book of like topics and characters and things you're finding and all that kind of stuff that kind of just shows the progress of, you know, what you found and done in this area. So I'm not yet off this island, but along the way towards the end, I found a like bar area that there were people playing a game of cards. I forget what they called it specifically, but it's a pretty neat card game that they came up with, like a baseline of rules, and you can play that in the main menu. You can just have it play that, but it seems like when you are in different islands, I think, in different communities, they'll have different house rules for that game. So you kind of learn a little bit about how that stuff is played in like that area. Though they don't, you know, build this up as like, you know, Gwent or something. You're going to be, you know, collecting cards or do anything like that. You'll just have opportunities to play this game with other people. I don't know what card game it would be similar to, but it's kind of a four-person game with two teams that sit across from each other. I don't know if that's like a bridge or something like that, but you're laying down cards. They have different point values from king to ace, and it's not sequential point values. It's like certain ones higher up are, you know, worth 0 points or worth, you know, 10, 11 points, as well as others being, you know, in the middle in terms of points. So you're kind of finding ways to lay those down to, in the, like this variant, the winning card gets added to the opponent's point total versus the rest of the cards going to your team's point total. And so you're finding ways of manipulating that to win a hand with like a 0 point card to give the other team nothing and take all the points for yourself, that kind of stuff. It's a pretty well done card game in there. So that's a bit of a surprise. I usually don't care for card games in any of these, any sort of game, usually that isn't based all around it. But so that's Salt Sea Chronicles. That's out now on everything. Let's see. I also checked out Mineko's Night Market. This has been on Switch and PC since last month, but just came out on PlayStation and Xbox this week and is on Game Pass for PC and console this week. And so this is very much kind of a life sim game of sorts where you're this character named Mineko, who has moved into this town on this island that has been kind of dying off in terms of population and sort of nightlife and all that. And you move into this like ramshackle house that is on the outskirts of this area. And your character sort of runs into this other kid named Bobo, who you meet his mom. And like both of you are ripping on Bobo. He's just constantly doing stupid stuff and getting made fun of. And you don't even get the opportunity to talk to him most of the time, but they figure out that there's this conspiracy going on where these government agents are searching for like Nico, this folklore cat that saved people in a village and like blessed people's crops, that kind of stuff. But a farmer that did not get his crops blessed, like chased him out of the village, sort of brought a curse upon the village of sorts. And so this cat has supposedly been seen around, and your characters sort of and Bobo are sort of messing around in areas they're not supposed to be. They have agents around, and one thing leads to another. You kind of fall off this bridge and potentially would die, but the cat a mysterious cat figure has saved you, that kind of thing. But along the way, you're kind of dealing with these agents in these new areas where you're going to get new materials out of them. And so initially you start collecting just flowers, and that uses up energy that you have. You have a heart meter that, you know, ticks down as you pick up flowers and stuff like that. So initially you just get a crafting table for making stuff out of the flowers. At the point where I'm at, I have a paper axe for cutting up birch trees to turn into paper. And then I'll potentially be able to get a crafting table for that stuff, but I'm using that right now to help patch up the house, because the house was in rough shape when your dad, you know, bought it and moved into it. So you're kind of working around with that stuff. And so you're making a bunch of stuff throughout the week. And on Saturday night, you're going to the titular night market that you sell some of your wares to make money off of that. And you're kind of putting that stuff out, I think up to 4 items. And you ring a bell to let people come up to buy stuff. And they give you like a wide range of prices. I think 6 from like very cheap to very expensive. And you're trying to, you know, offer numbers that you're thinking will entice people to buy the stuff. And so, yeah, when you're crafting, you get little mini games to determine if it's like a normal version or a perfect version, which is worth more. And so, like, you take that money, you can go to some of the other vendors to buy stuff from them, because it has an Animal Crossing style museum set up for, you know, different flowers. I think it's flowers, food from the night market. There's a museum just for that food. Like ore, and I think I forget the there's a fourth one, but I only have the 2 opened up right now. So kind of working my way through that stuff, but you have to buy new tools to open up the areas to get those other mechanics. The thing you have to do at the beginning is like this stealth sequence, sneaking in because the agents are after cats, or after a, you know, a mythical cat. They have round up all these cats in cages in these areas, and you're just sneaking through and unlocking the cats from their cages, kind of thing. And it's not challenging stealth. It's not even rewarding stealth or anything. It's just kind of lame stealth mechanics where your character is just watching these agents walking around. You're avoiding the light cone that they have in front of them. But the second time around, Bobo like hangs out with you for that. And that's a thing where they give you like options every single time you find one of these cages to like have him distract the guard or bribe the guard or do it yourself. And I did it myself and was done with the thing in like 5 seconds every single time. It's very kind of brain dead stealth mechanics. It was a matter of just like watching what's going on and just literally walking around. And once you opened up the cage, the agent just said like, oh, I got no time for this, and leaves. And it's really kind of just unrewarding stuff where it's like, I don't know why they really build up this as a thing you're going to do repeatedly when it's just not fulfilling in any way. So yeah, the game itself is pretty good. I would say it's very tedious at times. Like the stealth is just tedious, and you know, going around and collecting materials can be a bit tedious, and they don't really have great tutorial stuff for any of this. The mechanic for getting paper out of the birch tree stuff is, it describes, you know, like you have to hold the button down, then let go. And so I went and held the button down, and it told me I failed. And, you know, it shows you 2 images, 2 things. And it's like, oh, it's a golf meter essentially, but you have to hold the button between, you know, where you would hit it the first time and the second time, kind of thing. But it doesn't tell you that in the little bit of tutorial. And it's like, this seems like tutorials made by devs that know exactly what they're talking about, but not how you would describe it to somebody who's never played the game before. That kind of thing. They have a number of things like that where as you left, just trying to figure out how to do a thing myself, or, you know, going with the tutorial and realizing it didn't explain it super well and that things worked, you know, a little bit different than it seemed to be. So yeah, it's a game that's rough around the edges, but what's there is pretty neat. There's not too many of these where you're kind of setting up a shop yourself with the stuff you're making. But the prices for the tools and crafting benches is pretty high compared to what I made. But yeah, after the first night in the night market, it leveled up to level 2. I don't know what that means. It was like 2 hours just to get to the point where I could get the trees stuff, the paper that I could make stuff out of. So at that point, it unlocked a second heart for me. So now I could, you know, gather more than I could before. The only way you could sort of refill your heart with food or drinks. And I think drinks always do half a heart versus food doing a full heart. But there's, you know, obviously the cost is different between them. So, and it only lets you drink 3 per day, drink or eat 3 things per day to refill that. So they have like just weird limitations on that stuff. So yeah, it's a solid game, but it's got a lot of rough edges around it. So I might play some more of it, but I'm not like enthusiastically wanting to play more of it. So that's Mineko's Night Market. That's on everything at this point. The other game I've been playing is a Suika game. This is a game that's on the Switch, maybe mobile, I don't know, but it's like a $3 puzzle game that's, I guess, been getting buzzed as like a meme game or something. It is a puzzle game where it's a pretty simple puzzle game where you have a big glass box that you're dropping these fruits into, and it goes all the way from a cherry all the way up to like a big watermelon. And, you know, you match 2 cherries together, it turns into a strawberry, 2 strawberries into a grape, that kind of thing, going all the way up to the biggest fruit for Halloween. They have a Halloween theme, so the biggest fruit is the pumpkin. And that's, there's a lot of tricky stuff to it, so that all the fruits around, but obviously have different sizes, so as they kind of settle in the glass box, they can like roll around and, you know, move around in there. So you might get opportunities for, you know, smaller fruit to sink down and merge with others and that kind of stuff. So there's a physics to the merging of the 2 fruits so that it might move stuff around. I've had fruit get knocked across or even out of the box. And if you get a fruit out of the box, that ends your session. So you're trying to kind of keep everything controlled, controlled kind of chaos in there. But yeah, it's pretty well done for a simple concept. They have local leaderboards as well as online leaderboards, though the online leaderboards have been pretty spotty for me, where sometimes I'll play and it'll just tell me like I'm not connected to the internet, and I don't know what the problem is there. I can definitely tell it doesn't like being put to sleep in the middle of a game. But if I even closed it and opened it again, and it still claims I wasn't online, all that kind of stuff. So there's weirdness around that, but usually I'm just playing against the local scores I have. It keeps track up to certain amounts and tells you like, oh yeah, this is your top score, you know, daily, weekly, or monthly. So you're kind of trying to get onto at least one of those with a run. But yeah, sometimes you have bad luck of what you're presented with and trying to merge and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's a $3 Switch game. It's a pretty good one of those to like play at the end of a day or something when you got some time to kill before you go to sleep. That's a pretty fun one. But yeah, for other stuff I've been playing some more Spider-Man 2. Where I'm at in this, let's see. Harry, his powers are manifesting in a way, so that's kind of where I'm at. They're just starting to deal with whatever that is. You know, it's definitely not a symbiote of some kind, but that's where I'm at on that. So I've got more side stuff popping up. And I do really like the way this game does the side quests and the side mission stuff. Because they don't really throw a ton of random stuff in there. It's like the crime stuff that pops up is the most random stuff. But other than that, everything else kind of feeds into narratives. So where I'm at right now, Kraven the Hunter is now around in New York City. He has taken a few of the villains that he has been hunting. We're trying to track down some of them, trying to figure out and help others that we have found on his list to get to safety of some kind. And yeah, that's been pretty fun. And now the random crimes are now focused on hunters, things that they're doing, usually holding up somewhere looking for fights or, you know, on car chases and a couple other things. Not much in the way of fire tankers stuff, though. I think I just had that pop up as a side thing now that I can do. And also have this thing involving spider bots, spider little robots that are hanging around acting weird. Those get me some other material stuff. So yeah, liking it a lot. It's just such a fun game to play. It kind of doesn't make the side stuff feel like as much of a chore as it could be at in the first game. And so that's been a lot of fun, just kind of swinging around, doing stuff, and just progressing in the story, whichever way it goes. So that's been a lot of fun. And Super Mario Brothers, the other one I've been playing some more of. I'm in World 3 now. Beat World 2, and that was pretty fun. World 3 looks like it's going to be adding some more interesting stuff. So I just started that, so not really too much else I can say on that. But that's still been fun as well to play. And that's been pretty much it for me. So, Brandon, what have you been doing?
Well, I finished Amori. I finished that game a few days ago. Yeah, let's just say that towards the end of that game, it gets extremely dark. this game was already hinting at something awful happened in the past. But I won't really spoil it, but I will say, like, one of the sort of, I guess you could say, volume one spoiler or whatever, that's not really a spoiler or really a surprise or a twist or anything, is in the game, the part that takes place in Headspace, the way that you save your game and, like, restore your health is you'll come across this older girl named Mary, and she has, like, this picnic blanket out with, like, a picnic basket, which is what you use to, you know, save your game, and some kind of food she'll usually have out. It'll usually be everything from, like, it'll be something from, like, candy to vegetables to something like that. And that's how you, like, refill all your stats and everything. Well, we find out in the real-life portions of the game that Mary was actually the character that you play as his older sister, and she has been dead for about 4 years. So yeah, it the way that they reveal, like, how she died and all that, it's dark. I will warn ahead of time. I'm not going to spoil it, but it is very damn good and very engaging. But since I was finished with that, I decided, you know what? I had never, like, enjoyed the DLC for this game, and there's a bunch of it. I had played the original, but, you know, I wanted to play it again. I was like, you know, it's on PSN. I might as well buy it. So I went and got Shovel Knight Treasure Trove, which is a collection of both the original Shovel Knight game as well as all of the additional DLC that's been made with it. Stuff like the other games that have you playing as Spectre Knight and Plague Knight and King Knight and all that and all their related games, as well as stuff like the other additions and stuff like the showdown mode and all that. And what's especially fun about this version of Shovel Knight is you can actually, like, gender swap the entire cast of characters. So they actually, like, went through the trouble of, like, going back and making completely new, like, female sprites for every single one of the knights, and as well as Shovel Knight, and as well as making, like, male sprites for Shield Knight and the Enchantress. And it's like they didn't just, like, do some simple little alterations. They gave them, like, in some cases, completely new outfits. And it's really cool. Yeah, I finished Shovel Knight last night, and I had forgotten how First of all, I forgot how incredibly fun Shovel Knight was. That game is just a blast to play. I also forgot how unbelievably freaking difficult it gets towards the end of it, because, man, some of those platforming sections towards the end are infuriatingly difficult. So I finished that, and so I was like, I'm going to go ahead and do Spectre Knight next. And so I'm doing the Spectre Knight one. And the thing about Spectre Knight is, it's also a lot more difficult right off the bat, because not only does he have like a completely different move set than Shovel Knight has, all the stages are basically completely redesigned to move or go around and sort of challenge that move set. He basically has like he can walk up flat walls, and he can also do this thing where he can, like, kind of sort of jump teleport to a nearby target, which is what he uses to, like, kind of sort of double jump or triple jump to various areas. But it takes some serious timing, and it can be difficult. But, yeah, it's a great game. It's really good. Highly recommend. But, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be a lot of the same with some of the stuff thrown in. Spider-Man 2 has definitely been big for me. I think I'm a little bit past where Chris is. I've gotten to a point where Peter now has the symbiote. You know, I don't want to talk too much about how he got it or where he got it from, but his moveset has changed drastically. There was a point where, and you know, Chris mentioned it, where all of the crimes are now being done by hunters, and like, I don't know how you felt, Chris, but like, I feel like the hunters are significantly harder than like any other like basic enemy. These Spider-Man games have thrown at us before. Like, whenever I see them, especially as Miles, I die more often than not. And then the thing is, when you die in a crime, you know, you respawn, but like, crimes just randomly happen. You can't just go back to where you were and then, you know, hope for it to happen again. So like, that's been unfortunate. But yeah, like, as Peter and with these new abilities, like, these hunters are absolutely nobody. So it's just cool having like a different kind of moveset to use. Along with what you have. I've gotten to a point where I went on my first MJ mission, and honestly, I don't remember how they worked in the previous games, but now that she has, like, a taser, it felt very much like Last of Us stealth. You know, say what you want about whether it was good or bad, but I enjoyed it. It definitely gave the game, like, a different kind of feel, yet familiar, because obviously, like, you know, Last of Us being a PlayStation Studios game, along with Spider-Man, like, it all feels familiar, and sometimes, even though, you know, this game's made by Insomniac and, you know, Last of Us by Naughty Dog, like, it's really interesting seeing how similarly these games play and look, because the standard is obviously, like, above what were you, above, like, you know, what you see from any drone developer. But yeah, the gauge says I'm around, like, a little more than 30% through, so yeah, I've been playing slowly but surely, but I'm definitely enjoying what I'm playing so far. I also did this mission where you use the girl that Miles has a crush on. I forget her name. She's the deaf one. And it was interesting because, like, seeing as how she's deaf, it also, like, affected the game's audio. Like, when people are talking to you, all you hear is, like, muffled sounds. You can't really make out the sounds of, like, cars honking and whatnot. It's really interesting seeing how they tried to integrate, you know, deafness. Like, I personally can't talk about how accurate it is, but it was definitely an interesting direction to go with that. This particular mission required us to just cover up graffiti around the volunteer ground, and it was cool because it was a way where I've never seen the DualSense used before. For this, for example, you know, when you're doing graffiti or using any kind of spray can, you want to shake the can, right? So with the you're pretty much shaking the DualSense, and then at the same time you're holding R2 very slightly, but not too hard, so that, you know, you're able to accurately paint what you're doing, and then you have to guide the control stick to a place you see on the screen. So yeah, it's very intuitive and innovative use of the DualSense, yeah, it's pretty cool seeing what Insomniac has been able to do with, you know, what's now their fourth game, and, you know, pretty much their third game on the PS5 in the short time that it's been out. So Insomniac is really in their bag with their development, and I'm looking forward to, you know, finishing this game, and, you know, looking forward to Wolverine. And then, of course, I'm still playing Super Mario Brothers Wonder. I've gotten through 4 worlds now. I'm not really like trying 100% it, and by 100%, I mean, like, you know, get all the purple flower coins. And the main thing that I've been trying to do is like make sure that I have all the Wonder Fruit in every level. And the main way to get that is to make sure that you do find the Wonder Flower to morph up the world, because you get one fruit that way, and then you get another fruit for completing each level. So I've been doing that, and I've primarily been playing the game with my brother. And the main thing that I'm seeing here is that it's tough, especially when you both are varying skills with platformers. You know, going back to a game like Super Mario Brothers Wii, where it was like the first time they introduced co-op multiplayer in the Mario game. The thing about that game was it was chaotic, because you can throw each other around, you can bounce off each other, and at the same time, while that was a little bit annoying to do, you could use it strategically. You know, you can use your friends as other platforms as to get to higher positions or places you couldn't be before. You know, in Mario Wonder, you can't do that. And the other thing that I don't really like is if the person who isn't like quote-unquote player one or the star player, if they go off screen, they pretty much die or turn into a ghost, and you have like 5 seconds to revive that player. And what sucks about it is, like, you know, sometimes a lot of these levels are speedrun levels, and, you know, again, if you're of opposite playing styles, if you're not really good at platformers and you have one person speeding and the other person not, it's not fun for the other person, and it's also not fun for the person who's better to just revive that other player all the time. And like, when you do die in a level, you lose 2 lives instead of 1. So even though lives don't really matter, it is frustrating. And when you compare it to a game like Disney's Illusion Island, you know, a game that's really awesome with its co-op multiplayer, if you went off screen in Disney Illusion Island, the camera pans back so that you can see more of the level. That doesn't happen in Mario Brothers Wonder, and, you know, it's really unfortunate in that regard. You know, but those are just my annoyances, primarily with multiplayer. For the most part, I am very, very positive on this game. I'm very high on it. Like, I personally believe that this game is better than Super Mario World. Then again, I don't really have much nostalgia for it. My favorite 2D Mario platformer is Mario Brothers 3, and I wouldn't really put that in the same level yet, but I'm definitely enjoying what I've been playing so far. Every level's wonder portions are, you know, for lack of a better term, a wonder. It's done things like change the genre, even. Like, all of a sudden, it became like a shmup. Like a twin stick shmup. All of a sudden, like, it just makes the levels harder. It becomes a speed run level, as I mentioned before. Just seeing all the different that they've really, you know, dived into Mario and platforming in general. It's easy to see that there's sort of a torch being passed in the Mario games here. You know, obviously, like, guys like Miyamoto, you know, really changed the game. But knowing that we have this Mario Wonder platformer that's this good shows that, you know, it's going to continue to get better, if not just, you know, stay where it is and it's on top for a long time. And that's pretty cool to see, especially going into this next game that I've had for a while, Sonic Superstars. So I've been playing Sonic Superstars on the Switch since before I got Mario Wonder, but once Mario Wonder came out, I've only been playing that. And yeah, it's night and day. I do want to say, for the most part, I do like Sonic Superstars. But if you've played a Sonic game, you know how crazy each level can be. There is no such thing as being an exploratory Sonic player, because no matter which route you want to go to, you know, the end route is always going to be the same. But the problem is, you don't really have a lot of time to smell the flowers, just because the levels really limit you in that way. Like, there are multiple ways to finish a level, and there's no way to really see it. That being said, it's still very Sonic. On Switch, it looks fine. What I'm not very happy about is the way it transitions from level to level. The load screens are very, very bad. It's noticeable. Like, sometimes you'll see the screen transition and then sort of a hiccup. But then, like, once you're actually playing a level, you're fine, and it looks and feels. But yeah, playing this game side by side with Mario does not work. You definitely need to have some days of breaks in between, because, like, you know, they're just very But yeah, I wouldn't recommend this at full price, especially on the Switch. I don't know how it plays on the console, but the load times are definitely annoying, especially when Sonic Mania didn't have them. So it's unfortunate there. Moving on, I am playing Jusant. I can't talk about whether that game is good or bad or not, because we are not at the embargo, but I am allowed to say that I've been playing it. I'll have a review up sometime soon. You can expect the review then. So, yeah, Jusant is a game made by Don't Nod, and the primary thing. And, you know, I love my climbing, especially, you know, after playing so much Breath of the Wild. And I also got my hands on football last week. This is the game made by, I believe, the same people that did 2K Playgrounds. I'm not quite sure. Don't quote me on that. This is sort of like an answer to NFL Street or NFL Blitz. More so Street. It uses a lot of the same players. And the thing that makes it different is the fact that you have cards that you can use. And these cards pretty much give you different abilities. You know, they can make your receivers catch the ball better. They can make the ball travel faster, turbo, things like that. And it's cool trying to use certain cards to go over cards that your opponents use. So it's pretty cool playing the game with human players. And yeah, I've had a lot of fun so far. While there aren't any like NFL teams, this game is licensed by the NFLPA. So basically every starter that you see there is every starter in the NFL is, for example, like if you're using the 49ers, they're going to be Team Purdy. The Browns will be like Team Watson. So it's pretty interesting. And the other game that I've been playing a whole lot of is Crime Machina. This is an action JRPG, very much in the same vein as what we've seen at a Platinum Games. And it's a lot of people will compare it to Nier Automata just because of its play style, but it's a little bit more simple than that. Yes, you have some I want to call them on rails levels, because they're very linear. But then, like, after you finish each level, you go back to your base and try to upgrade things like that. So the story is kind of weird. It's about like the afterlife, and they're sort of like in a post-apocalyptic world where humanity died, and they're trying to find a way to revive humanity, but people don't agree. And you know, you're fighting devils and gods and all these machinations of various demigod beings. So it's weird like that. I'm having fun. I don't really have too much time to be playing it, but I thought I'd mention. So, yeah.
All right. Let's get to some news. First up, with the stuff going on in Israel and the Gaza, some developers on Itch decided to set up a charity bundle there for what is it? Medical Aid for Palestinians, MAP. Charity there that a lot of people have been donating to try to get as much aid to people in Palestine. And yeah, this has over 250 items in it, a bunch of games and other stuff in there. They have already reached their initial goal, which was 10,000. They've raised it up a few times. Now they're at $200,000, almost about to hit that pretty soon. Like, it's still going to be available for another 10 days as of this recording. So you got time if you want to do a charity bundle like that. Get some cool games and help out people for that. So that's worth checking out. If you don't want games, you know, donate directly to organizations like that. So there you go for that. Just wanted to give a shout out for that. So there you go. For other stuff, Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack got a new game for the Nintendo 64 app.
Yeah.
And it is Mario Party 3. Kind of surprisingly, like, had a bit of a break between Mario Party 1 and 2 joining it to adding 3 to the bunch. So, yeah, people can check that out. And, yeah, there you go. You know, the third game of those. They at least learned not to have a game just rubbing your palm on a control, you know, analog stick as much as possible.
Yeah.
So that you start burning away layers of skin there.
Yeah. I mean, like, Mario Party 2 already solved that problem, but Mario Party 3 was the game where, for me, that was where Mario Party started to go a little bit off the rails as far as like a franchise being milked. It seemed like it was a yearly thing at that time, and honestly, it was. But you know, for what it was back in the day, I definitely enjoyed it. You have the elder star there as like someone who guides the story, and yeah, you know what Chris mentioned about burning your palms. The way they replaced that with games like Mario Party 2 and 3 was, you know, having weasel thumbs, you know, just being able to tap the button as quickly as possible. I remember, you know, when I was, I forgot how old I was, but when Mario Party 2 and 3 came out, I was using a spoon to press the button as quickly as possible. So, yeah, I ruined a lot of controllers that way.
Yeah. But yeah, that's out now, so you can check that out. I think the last Nintendo 64 game they have to add at some point is 1080 Snowboarding. And that's everything that they have announced ahead of time for that. So hopefully they got more, because that's easily the most anemic of the platforms that they've got. Well, GBA might be worse, but there's a lot more to add there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're probably waiting for a big direct to announce a bunch more stuff. So we'll see how that stuff goes. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Let's see. Something coming out here in a couple of weeks. Power Wash Simulator has some DLC. The Back to the Future special pack is finally got a date. November 6th, 16th. Mm-hmm. $8 for that. Gets you a handful of maps. Let's see. Doc Brown's van, I assume outside the mall. The Time Machine, also outside the mall. Hill Valley Clock Tower. The Holomax Theater from the future. Doc's Time Train, and yet more new achievements for that. And yeah, $8. Going to be a pretty solid time. That's in about 2.5 weeks. So I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And other stuff we got coming out in the near future. December 5th is Born of Bread. This is an indie game that is a... what do they call it? A home-cooked turn-based RPG. Kind of having like 2D animated characters moving around these somewhat 3D environments.
Mm-hmm.
The battle system has a little bit of like a Paper Mario to it there. That looks pretty neat. And yeah, it looks like it's going to be a pretty neat game. I think there's demos out potentially on everything. I definitely saw it on PlayStation and Steam, so that might be something to check out if you want to see if it's your thing.
Mm-hmm.
For that, because I think it was supposed to come out, I think, this month, but it got delayed here. So December 5th is their new date, as they're calling it, their fully baked date.
Yep.
So, you know, saying it's finally ready for it. So, yeah, that's one to check out.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. And the other thing that's coming out that day, Disney Dreamlight Valley, which has been in early access for a good while now.
Yeah.
Let's see, August 2022. So, yeah, just over a year and change. Finally going to be out and hitting 1.0 in December.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike the way that the game was pitched early on, they would have paid early access and then would launch free to play. They've decided... what if we don't do free-to-play? What if we just make you keep paying for the game? Because I'm guessing they must have sold a lot of the early access copies there, paid versions, and that's a thing they would like to keep doing. And from what I've read, they've continued to add like microtransactions in the game and all that kind of stuff, so that'll be coming out alongside a paid expansion here, Rift in Time. Which I think is a Ratchet and Clank game. Is that the last one?
Yep.
I don't know why they called it that then. Since that game is only 2 years old. But yeah, there you go. Pretty shitty of Disney and Gameloft here. Going back on the free-to-play promise here, especially because, you know, I believe the game is cross-play, so you could play with people on other games, and free to play is great for that because you can just jump around as you need. If you want to play it on, you know, PlayStation or Xbox or PC or Switch or whatever, you could do that. But having to pay each time kind of just locks you into one platform unless you have plenty of money to spend. But Yeah, it looks like it'll be $40 for the base game, $50 and $70 for the more expensive editions, and the expansion will be $30 by itself, which is a lot. I don't think any of the other versions include it, so you're immediately gonna, if you're gonna want that as well, make that into a $70, $80, or $100 game with those other additions. So that's a lot. You probably don't need to get the expansion right away, because it's from what I played of it, it's on Game Pass, and I believe it's still on there. So those people are basically either going to keep playing on Game Pass or have to buy it, because that's the only way it's somewhat free to play at this point. But yeah, this is not a great idea here, I think. I think they should have stuck to the thing, but they're going to capitalism and try to make as much money as they can off of this, since it's been doing pretty well for them, as far as I could tell. And that's a little bit disappointing, because you could see it with Speedstorm, that they kind of got that out of early access really fast, because I imagine people weren't buying into it as much as Dreamlight Valley. And that is free to play everywhere. So it seems like Dreamlight Valley must have done pretty well to just get them to go back on the claims they made ahead of launch. So yeah, there you go. Some shitty news there. But yeah, let's see what's next here. Marvel's Spider-Man 2, that launched this past week. And yeah, did very well from the numbers that Sony announced, as they say it reached 2.5 million copies sold within the first 24 hours of launch, which is huge numbers. Seemingly the fastest selling of PlayStation Studios game in PlayStation history, which is a big deal. The numbers they've announced for other games have been very good, but also in different time frames. Let's see, they had Spider-Man reach 3.3 within 3 days of launch. I think God of War hits like 5 million in 5 days, something like that. And The Last of Us 2 had a pretty big number in like a week, something like that. So yeah, Spider-Man 2 doing very well, and it seems like Sony's banking on that, pushing console sales here for the rest of the holiday season. So that's great news for Insomniac, all the work they put into that game. So that's awesome news for that game. But we'll get to some downer Sony news. Looks like Media Molecule has laid off about 20 people. They've gone from about 135 to 115, about a reduction of about 15 to 20%. Laid off some quality people. They put out a good message on this. It's like Media Molecule has made significant strategic changes during the past year, including shifting our focus from Dreams to our new project. We've had to make the difficult decision to begin with the consultation process for team members within certain departments of the studio. This is a tough moment for the individuals impacted and the studio overall. Every single role that's been put at risk is delivered by someone who's contributed something special to Media Molecule. We'll make sure those impacted receive the best support we can provide during this process. We will continue to support the Dreams community for the foreseeable future, and we'll update on future plans at a later date. So yeah, you could definitely tell like a human wrote that versus your typical statement about layoffs. So that's, you know, awful news to hear, but hopefully those people get a good severance package as they, you know, go back onto the market and look for new jobs elsewhere. So hopefully have some good news for those people in the future. And yeah, let's get to some weird news. There was a Capcom ransomware attack a few years ago that managed to get a bunch of data, I think over 1 terabyte of data, that was stolen, including a bunch of employee data, as well as stuff about potential games they were working on and all that. And that was pretty bad times for Capcom there. But it looks like let me see how many. Yeah, over the last several years, a bunch of the people from that gang, if not all of them, have been arrested.
Yep.
By a number of countries working together.
Mm-hmm.
11 countries. Yeah, an international police force composed of 11 countries, including Japan and the U.S. Yeah, let's see. Czechia, Latvia, Spain, Germany, the Netherlands, and more working together to arrest these people and make them, you know, actually pay for their crimes.
Mm-hmm.
The ransomware gang called Ragnar Locker. So, yeah, that's good news. Take one of these groups down, though there's plenty more of them to go around. And yeah, it's very tough for companies to fully protect themselves. There's always going to be vulnerabilities somewhere. But hopefully that is something that will be less of a thing at some point, but
mm-hmm.
who knows. But yeah, this is kind of wild to see this actually get taken care of versus the way they tend to seem to go.
Yeah. Seriously.
So yeah, that's the some good news there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get to the Xbox news here. They have done some reorganization. Announced some new presidents with this. Let's see. Yeah, Matt Booty has a new position. He is lead of game content and studios, so managing, let's see, I think all the first parties, including ZeniMax and Bethesda.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be managing that stuff. Yeah, so that's a solid choice instead of sort of letting Bethesda kind of do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see. The other one is that since he is no longer the head of Xbox, the president of Xbox, Sarah Bond has taken that role. She was sort of the lead of their sort of partnership group, dealing with like Game Pass and all that. And so she has moved up quickly to take the role as the head of Xbox now.
That's
great for her. She's done some good work there. So be curious to see that. And there's a number of other people that have moved up. Yeah, the Microsoft Executive Vice President, Commercial Chief Marketing Officer, Takeshi Nomoto, is now the Chief Marketing Officer role at the company after, who is this? I guess the guy that had that position before left, Chris Capocella, who'd been at Microsoft for 32 years. So, yeah, getting a bit of a shakeup here. Maybe get some better people in charge of these things here. Yeah, Microsoft Corporate Vice President and Consumer Chief Marketing Officer Yusuf Mehdi is now working as Microsoft Executive Vice President and Consumer Chief Marketing Officer.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember the Xbox One unveiling show, he was the guy that demoed the Kinect stuff. And not doing a great job of it, but you know, doesn't really harm his stuff there. So yeah, a little bit of a shake up there at Microsoft. Nobody really losing their jobs other than one guy leaving, but hopefully lead to them making some smarter decisions and have less wasted time on stuff like Redfall, Halo Infinite, at least the where that was going when they were planning to launch it. And yes, some of that other stuff. So hopefully they get their act together now that they've got Activision Blizzard to deal with as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's the big news. They also had a little showcase called Xbox Partner Preview that didn't really have anything huge here, but it had some just trailers from different things, a couple of announcements, but nothing huge. We did get a trailer for Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, where they showed off this new area in the game called Happy Resort Dondoko Island. That's basically them adding a life sim to the game.
Yeah.
Where Ichiban just rides a dolphin to this other island.
Yep.
And from there he can you know, collect materials and make stuff and sell things for money and build build out, you know, neighborhoods and build up his house and put stuff in it and all that kind of stuff and talk to people and hang out and relax.
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, I don't want you guys to put this in as a you know, side part of this game and not just make this a game in itself.
Well, it's sort of a continuation of the business sim aspect from the first game.
Yeah, but those are fairly one-note kind of things versus this is like a whole thing you could spend probably a decent amount of time in on its own.
Yeah, and then like as far as the business stuff minigame, like those are pretty much in all the Yakuza games in some form. This, like, I don't know like who else watched the actual trailer for it. It's set up like Animal Crossing. They put Animal Crossing in Yakuza. I'm like, I'm all for this. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems neat. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there you go. That's the like a dragon news. Let's see, we got a new game announced. Ikaro Will Not Die. This is the new game from Future Lab, makers of Velocity 2X and Power Wash Simulator.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar games. So they have announced this new thing that looks very much like an indie action game of sorts with some, platforming and action stuff going on. There's not really too much to gather from the trailer, but yeah, it's... looking pretty neat. Seems like it'll just be on Xbox and PC, but no date or anything for that. So there you go for that. They're partnering with Thunderful Games on that. So there you go there. Still Wakes the Deep. Got some gameplay and as it's coming to PS5, Xbox Series X and S and PC early 2024. It'll also be on Game Pass. From the Chinese Room, so it's kind of a first-person adventure horror game of sorts. So very much this oil rig off the coast of Scotland gets attacked by some mysterious force, and it seems like Cthulhu stuff, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's coming out of the sea. That's usually Cthulhu stuff, but
yeah,
maybe it's something else. But you can tell the guy... That you know you're controlling is Scottish because he says shite instead of shit.
Yeah.
So there you go for that. That looks interesting.
Yeah.
We got Spirit of the North 2 announced, sequel to the first game. That's kind of a nature platformer adventure game kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
This one seems like it'll be open world. So sure.
Mm-hmm.
I like the first game enough, but. That's on PS5, Xbox Series X and S and PC. No mention of Game Pass on that, so that'll be out at some point. Let's see, we got our first look at Metal Gear Solid Delta Snake Eater's visuals, which looks really good.
Oh, yeah.
Though it also looks like they are essentially layering on these new visuals on the original animations.
Yeah, which can make it look probably a little janky.
Yeah, and it might be early, but there's like some nature stuff where you're seeing a crab walk around in the water and the water does not, you know, ripple at all.
Mm.
And it's like, that doesn't look great.
Yeah.
stuff like that, that's the nature stuff that doesn't look great. Whereas like, it looked fine on a PS2 because it was a PS2.
Yeah.
You didn't expect water to react to things too much. But here, probably should, but we have no idea when this is coming out. If it's even out next year, who knows, but looking good, but without Kojima there, I'm not that enthusiastic about this. So there's that. There's a Manor Lords coming to PC Early Access April 26th next year. Consoles at some point after that, it'll be on Game Pass at launch for PC and then console whenever that happens, but that's a historical city building game set in 14th century Europe.
Yep.
By I believe a Slavic developer. They're called Slavic Magic, so good name. But yeah, that's one of those games, so you'll still have to wait 6 months for that, for it to go into early access. And let's see, the Finals has a crossplay open beta that's out now. This is a free-to-play first-person shooter from ex-DICE people. That seems like they're leaning into some of the things you want out of Battlefield games, with like destruction and that kind of stuff. But I believe it's like a 3v3 flag game, capture the flag game. So that's like a multiplayer first-person shooter trope, you know, mode that I generally do not gravitate towards, but this could be neat. I have not checked it out. I downloaded it, but then started it. But they give you a good bit of time to check it out. They also have a free battle pass with stuff to unlock for the launch, but everything else you unlock does not stick with you. So that's out. That's on PS5, Xbox, and PC.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, they showed off the Ark Survival Ascended. If you've not been paying attention to this is not Ark 2. This is a remake of the first game in Unreal Engine 5 as sort of a test for working on that for Ark 2.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone in, you know, remade all the visuals and all that in Unreal Engine 5, which looks nice. But if you own the game before, you have to pay for it again to get this version of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And not really like any major discount if you owned it before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of very much like, that's not great.
Because
mm-hmm. They know people, this is a game that sold a lot, the original game, and they're just expecting people to buy it again for like $45.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have a 10% off launch week discount, but it's like people who own the first game, you know, the original game should get like at least a 50% discount or something.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get more people to buy in that way, but they're also probably assuming that they're just going to be, you know, FOMOing to buy the game again anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is not supposed to be as much of a hardware hog or a hard drive hog as the original, where I think the Steam version requires like 300 gigs on your hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
To which I was like, nope, not doing that at all.
Mm-hmm.
I got better uses for 300 gigs than one game.
Yeah.
I got to install 100 games that I will never start on Steam. But there you go for that. That'll be out. It's out now in early access on PC, but not on the consoles just yet. That'll be next month at some point. There you go. That's pretty much it. So not really much in the way of huge news out of this. Just some developers getting to announce dates and show off some trailers and such that you would have seen anyway. So,
oh yeah.
There you go. Some neat stuff. And that's kind of it for the show. Not really a huge amount this week outside of us continuing to play some games. So, thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week. We'll be back next week with a new slate of news and games to talk about as we continue to play, you know, Spider-Man and Mario and all that kind of stuff. What do we got coming out this week? I want to say Jusance this week.
Yeah, we have Jusant. One game that none of us talked about, because I guess none of us are playing it, is Alan Wake 2.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have not played it just yet. I want to very badly, but
yeah,
move some money around for that to happen.
Yeah, what else we got in November for the rest of the week? There's a bunch coming out. There's My Times at Sandrock, RoboCop Rogue City, Star Ocean The Second Story R, The Talos Principle 2, Thirsty Suitors are all November 2nd.
Yep.
And November 3rd is, Ebenezer in the Invisible World, the World Rally Championship game from EA, and WarioWare Move It.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of games coming out this week.
Yep.
Running the gamut from, you know, sim rally racing games to whatever WarioWare you want to describe that as, to, you know, Talos Principles, first-person puzzle stuff, to RoboCop, you know, first-person shooter stuff, to JRPGs and survival games and whatever Thirsty Suitors is.
Yeah.
A romance RPG game. Mm-hmm. And then you got Ebenezer and Invisible World, a sequel to, a classic Christmas story stuff, but it's a Metroid game.
Mm-hmm.
What you expect out of Ebenezer Scrooge to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A lot of stuff this week, so we'll be back next week with a new slate of news and stuff to talk about. And if you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select Strangers. that are also going to be checking out some cool stuff this week. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.